Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me at JT Gatlin on Twitter. And today's show, it's going to be a bit of a smorgasbord. We've got the Lakers recap. We've got the Thunder in town for an early tip-off, 4 p.m. tip-off here in Houston. So that's going to be a nice little revenge game to have CP3 back in town for the second time in a Thunder jersey, especially given the circumstances of how you just lost to them recently. And on the backs of a 3-game losing streak, this team has a lot to prove. On top of that, I might get into a little bit of some of the transactions and moves that have led to this current iteration of this Rockets team, because I'm sure many of you have been frustrated, but I am also a bit frustrated as to the limitations of the players on this team. And I don't think that's too far-fetched of me to say at this point. I think that this team has shown that there are caps on what they are capable of doing. I mean, on a night where Russell Westbrook had 35 points and James Harden had 34 points, and you still can't come away with the win against an Anthony Davis-less Lakers squad, there's some major concerns there. And then lastly, I think I would like to take a moment near the end of the podcast to remember and at least give some recognition to and highlight that of Martin Luther King Jr. As this podcast will air on MLK Day. I'd like to take a moment to talk about him later on. So when we get there, we'll get there. But first, we got the Lakers game. And this Lakers game, it felt good for two quarters. It really did. It felt awesome for two quarters. I mean, granted, they were playing without AD, so, you know, it's kind of, there's an asterisk on it, and you can't exactly, if they had won the game, you couldn't walk away pumping your fist saying, yeah, we're top of the conference, we're the best. No, it's not how it would have worked. This was a game that you wanted to win because they were on a 2-game slide already, having lost 3 of their last 4 games. Now instead, you come away with a loss, 124-115, here in Houston. You lose to the Anthony Davis-less Lakers, and now you've lost 3 games in a row. You've lost 4 out of your last 6, and things have not looked great to start the 2020 year. 2-4 to start 2020. Not great. Not a great way to start the roaring 20s for this Rockets club. That first half, that energy was incredible, though. The way they stormed the court in the first quarter, it looked night and day compared to the Grizzlies game, compared to the Trailblazers game. It looked like the team had finally got their heads screwed on right, and they decided, hey, we're the Rockets. We're a basketball club. Let's go out there and actually play like we give a damn about winning a game. And they did that for the first 24 minutes. Obviously, yes, there were still some defensive miscues. There were still some miscommunications there. But just by going out and giving the effort that they gave through the first 24 minutes, you could see it was making a difference. And so much of defense is just going out there and just wanting to play defense. Like, it really is. For anybody that's ever picked up a basketball or stepped foot on a basketball court, you don't have to be a Kawhi Leonard on defense to be a passable defender. Like, I'm sorry, you don't have to be a DPOY to be a passable defender in the NBA. You just have to actually care just a little bit on that side of the basketball to want to make an impact. And then you have guys who turn it up a notch on that side of the ball, guys like PJ Tucker, who hone in on certain possessions or who just give their 115% energy every moment that they're on the court. And they make a difference just by hustling and just by putting forth that much effort on defense. And so it was great to see the Rockets actually do that for the first 24 minutes of the game. Then that third quarter happened. Yikes. You know, I had to go back, and I don't do this for every game because I would spend way too many hours, way more hours than I have available in any given day of mine. I went back, and there's a website, NBA Full Replay, that'll let you go back and actually watch the full replay of an NBA game. It's pretty awesome. If you've never checked it out, feel free to. But I went back and watched the full replay of the third quarter, just start to finish, because I just really, I mean, that was the quarter that where everything got derailed. Rockets lost the quarter 32-17. You only score 17 points in the third quarter. And the Rockets have notoriously been one of the best third quarter teams in the NBA. Ali Khambijani of The Athletic tweeted out that the Rockets were ranked third or fourth, I want to say, in net rating in the third quarter alone. And so that was great because the third quarter historically has been a quarter that's been dominated by who? You guessed it, the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors were the third quarter juggernaut of the NBA for years. And so it's kind of great that the Rockets have kind of taken over that mantle or are one of the teams that have been at least excelling in that regard where they're coming out of halftime and either building upon a lead or regaining a lead out of the half because they're so good in third quarters. But that was not the case in this game. They came out, and I don't even want to say the energy wasn't horrible to start the third quarter. It really wasn't. Like, compared to the first half, because I skimmed the first half while I was doing the NBA replay. I just didn't jump to the third quarter. But they weren't necessarily playing any worse or playing with any less energy at the start of the third. It's just, well, the third quarter was also super weird because you had some weird possessions at the start of the third that kind of threw the game off kilter a bit. You know, a couple offensive fouls here and there. You know, teams couldn't really get into their rhythm. But then past that, the Rockets just, they went ice cold from behind the arc. 1 of 13 shooting from behind the arc in that quarter alone. And these are the cold spells that this team, look, this team has been an up and down three-point shooting team throughout the Mike D'Antoni era. That's nothing new. But these drastic cold spells are absolutely new. And obviously somebody's going to hear me say this and then go, no, 0 for 27. Hey, there was a made three-pointer in that 0 for 27 that James Harden hit that got waved off. And besides that, we've all grown accustomed to the 0 for 27 and saying, yeah, that was like a 1 in a million chance for that to happen. I forget the actual statistics behind it, but for that team of three-point shooters to go 0 for 27, the statistical improbability of that happening was insane, to say the least. This team has not had stretches like this before. And it is a largely different roster than the 17-18 squad, which I will get into in the next segment a little bit. But there has to be something else that goes on there. And yes, the majority of this team's problems are on the defensive side of the basketball. Absolutely. The Lakers were able to pile on points while the Rockets then forgot how to play offense, and that's a bad combination. If you cannot rely on your defense to bail you out during these offensive dry spells, then yes, you are going to struggle and you are going to give up a 32-point quarter to the Lakers while you only put up a 17-point quarter. That's a 15-point differential. So yes, the Lakers took a 9-point lead into the fourth quarter. The Lakers came out of halftime, punched the Rockets in the mouth, and they had no adjustment, no response to it other than to continue shooting threes. And here's the kicker, is had the Rockets actually hit, we'll just say, a few more of their three-pointers, yeah, you're going into the fourth quarter tied with the Lakers, or maybe even with a slight edge. So you can make the argument, oh, well, they just missed their shots. But I hate that argument. I think it is one of the worst arguments ever. I don't care how wide open the shots are. At some point, there has to be a threshold for, okay, we've missed 5 wide open three-pointers in a row. That's when Mike D'Antoni like waves his hands or does a coach's signal or whatever we want to call it, calls for a play to be run, something going downhill towards the basket something to get the guys more engaged, something to actually force the Lakers' hand to actually play differently, because all they had to do was close out on shooters. And yeah, there were still some of those 13 three-pointers in that third quarter were wide open and were just misses. But again, I'm of the belief that after a certain threshold of missing consistent threes, you have to change it up at some point. Because otherwise you're going to get exactly what they got, which was a 17-point quarter. And if you're not defending on the other side of the court, then yes, you're going to put yourself into a hole. And then yes, sometimes your hot shooting can then dig you out of a hole, but that doesn't always happen. And banking on a team of notoriously poor three-point shooters and inconsistent three-point shooters to hopefully hit a hot streak, or to just hope that James Harden is going to break out of his shooting funk at any moment and suddenly pour in another 40-point or 50-point evening, that's not good enough. The bar is too high for this team. You cannot just get by on hoping that James Harden will be MVP caliber every night, or hoping that your inconsistent three-point shooters will, one of them will catch fire from behind the arc. Because they all actually shot relatively decent percentages. Daniel House Jr. was really the only bad shot on the evening. You had Eric Gordon, who was 3 of 9, so 33%. Daniel House Jr., 2 of 8, so 25%. Ben McLemore, 3 of 6, 50%. James Harden, 2 of 9, can't do the math off the top of my head, but if he had hit one more 3, then he would have been 3 of 10, so 30%, so somewhere hovering around that number, maybe a little under. I'm bad at fractions, so I'm not even going to attempt it. And then PJ Tucker, 2 of 5. So it's not like the team shot abysmal from behind the arc, but there was a stretch where it was poor shooting. And that's what killed the team. That third quarter killed the team in this game. And following that same train of thought, I am so damn proud of Russell Westbrook for not attempting a single three-pointer in this game. He had all the reason in the world, especially with the team down big, needing to mount a comeback. He had all the reason in the world to start jacking up triples to try and, you know, play hero ball and win this game. But instead, he continues to impress with these efficient games, sticking to what he knows, sticking to what he is good at, and didn't attempt a single three. It was 15 to 23 from the floor. 5 of 9 from the charity stripe, so his free throws were a bit shaky there in this game. 35 points on the evening. 9 boards, 7 assists, 3 steals. Did have 5 turnovers, but I've said it time and time again, I'm okay with 4 to 5 turnovers from both he and Harden as long as the rest of the team isn't turning the ball over a lot, which they did tonight, unfortunately. So that aspect of the game didn't quite work out. But I've gone on long enough in this first segment. I have to get to the commercial break. And before we get there, I do have a quick word from our friends over at Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your shortlist of applicants fast. You can also add skills tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills, like accounting, to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms and conditions and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Regrettably talking about the Rockets' 124-115 loss at home to the LA Lakers, dropping the team to 26-15 on the season. They are now 14-6 at home. The Lakers continue to hold the number one spot in the Western Conference, sitting at a very comfortable 34-8 with an 18-3 record on the road. So I mentioned it last segment, that James Harden, well, that the team has not had a great start to the 2020 campaign, and that's in large part due to James Harden's struggles to start the year. Now, again, I've been very vocal about this, it's a flawed system with this Rockets team. It's great when it works, and it's almost unbeatable when it works, but when it doesn't work, when James Harden is not performing at an MVP caliber level, when the role players are not consistently hitting their shots, when Westbrook doesn't show up as the Robin to James Harden's Batman, or better yet, as the Superman to James Harden's Batman, as we mentioned once before, this team looks bad. They just do. They do not have a defensive structure to fall back on. And again, a lot of that falls on the shoulders of James Harden and his production. And so, yeah, he had a 34-point game in this one, but he wasn't efficient. I mean, he was 8 of 20 from the floor, 2 of 9 from behind the three-point arc, 16 of 18 at the charity stripe. He shot almost all the Rockets' free throws himself. He had 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 turnovers. It's a little high for him. But he just has not been the same efficient James Harden. And again, he was dropping in 40 to 50 points a night on insane efficiency for about a month or a month and a half there. And suddenly that he's regressed back to being a normal human being, this team is suddenly showing its flaws. And that's just a testament to James Harden's greatness. How great he can play to mask the deficiencies in this team is a testament to his greatness. I'm running out of words. So many other people are running out of words. Because what else can you say about a guy who was at one point averaging more points than anybody other than Wilt Chamberlain in a season? He has since regressed. He is now down to 37.1 as his points per game average for the season. But to start the 2020 campaign, he's averaging below, brace yourselves, guys, James Harden is averaging below 30 points per game in the calendar year of 2020. I know that's insane to think about. He's averaging 29.7. Hasn't happened in a while. But he's also doing it on really poor efficiency. Just 34% shooting from the floor, 27% from behind the three-point arc. He is getting 13 free throw attempts a game, so that's an uptick based on his recent numbers, because he was down to about 7 or 8 free throw attempts a game. So it's kind of nice to see that number higher. And his free throw percentage hasn't, I mean, it's dipped a little bit, but 85%, you live with that. But the biggest issue is that his production is just not nearly as high as it once was. And on top of that, his efficiency has plummeted as well. So when you couple those two things, along with the fact that the Rockets role players have suddenly become allergic to showing up in games, it's not working out. This team has clear weaknesses, and I have significant reservations about them actually willing to do anything to improve the roster. I really do. Because again, this team can win games. When James Harden plays to his top-tier MVP standards and is phenomenal, and with Russell Westbrook playing as well as he has played as of late, as of the last about month, month and a half, If we continue to get this version of Russ, and when James kind of skews back towards his normal level of play and his normal efficiency, I'm not talking about the insane efficiency we were getting in December. I'm just not talking about the 27% three-point shooting he's sitting on right now. If he skews back towards his middle ground, I'll settle for 35%, because he was shooting 40% on step-back threes for about a month. So I'll settle for 34 or 35% over 27% any day of the week. So as James skews back that direction, as Russ continues to play his version of basketball, and as one to two of the role players step up on any given night, yeah, this Rockets team will continue to win some games. But the inconsistency factor right now, from the role players to James Harden's level of play, Russell Westbrook's been the most consistent Rocket in 2020 so far. If you would have told me that 6 months ago, I would have said that I would like a little bit of whatever you were smoking, because I would not have believed you. And so now here we are in January 2020, and Russell Westbrook has been the best Houston Rocket of the 2020 calendar year, without a doubt. And so to revisit some things, my reservations as far as this team and the ability to improve the team stem from the past transactions, or lack thereof, that Tillman Fertitta and Daryl Morey have made, or again, haven't made, to improve this team. And I'm just going to run through a few of them. So let Trevor Ariza walk for nothing and tried to replace him with James Ennis. So obviously you can make the argument the Rockets wouldn't have paid Trevor Ariza $15 million a year. Yes, you can make that argument. It doesn't mean that they had no money to throw around. And it also doesn't mean that you live with the cheap replacement of James Ennis. There were, again, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was probably a better option than James Ennis out there that was available for the team. Or you just bite the bullet and you go over the cap to re-sign Ariza. And then if you have to dump him later on, so be it. You can move a $15 million salary. That's not the end of the world. Then past that, Luke Bamute was let go for nothing and replaced with, say, Michael Carter-Williams. So another money-saving move. And then, yes, you can make the argument. Luke Bamute was then injured at the start of that season, at the start of the 18-19 season, didn't play at all, isn't currently playing this season anywhere. So, yes, you can make the argument that his shoulder was, you know, had issues going on with it. But again, Michael Carter-Williams as a replacement, we all know how the Melo situation went. There were just too many different moves. Traded Ryan Anderson and DeAnthony Melton for Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris. Again, another money-saving move. Then we traded Chris for nothing. Then we traded Knight for Iman Shumpert, dropping a draft pick to be able to do it. Did not re-sign Iman Shumpert, so now there's no tradable salary. Eric Gordon is locked up, yes, but he is no longer trade eligible, so the team can't look to do anything with his deal until the following summer. There are just too many moves that this team has made in favor of ducking the luxury tax, and too many opportunities to have given Daryl Morey flexibility to improve the roster that have not been acted upon to this day. And right now, the team is sitting on a couple of different avenues to improve the roster. They have two different traded player exceptions that they could use, one worth $3.6 million, I believe, and the other one worth $3.2 million. And so the way those traded player exceptions work is they cannot be aggregated with any other form of salary. So you can't pair one of those $3 million traded player exceptions with another player and then send them off. It doesn't count that way. You can, however, use those TPEs to absorb a player with an equivalent salary or a smaller salary, I should say. And you just absorb them directly as long as you have an open roster spot and as long as the other team doesn't want that player anymore or you're giving that team something of value like a second round draft pick or cash considerations or hell, sometimes the team just needs to unload a player slot and they have somebody on their roster that they're not currently using or that doesn't fit their rotation and simply freeing up a roster spot would be more ideal for that team than having that player on their payroll. Maybe they want to save the money on the salary, whatever it may be. So the Rockets said that they waived Gary Clark because they were looking at the buyout market and they were hopeful that they were going to be aggressive in the buyout market to add a buyout candidate. That's phenomenal. I'll believe it when I see it. Because as it stands right now, I am not holding my breath on them filling that spot with a legitimate person that's going to help this team. Because again, you've got the corpse of Thabo Sefolosha, who only recently started getting minutes because Mike D'Antoni refuses for whatever reason to play Isaiah Hartenstein, who is opting to play Tyson Chandler over Isaiah Hartenstein, which, quick sidebar, there were at least three possessions that Tyson Chandler cost this Rockets team points because he simply is too big and too slow to guard fast-paced teams or athletic younger teams. And there were so many different points in that third quarter where he was left on an island on a pick and roll or on a switch or whatever, or just not getting back quick enough in transition and then being isolated on a guard. And then JaVale McGee gets a clean look at the bucket because he's half a foot taller than the next tallest player on the Rockets team. Isaiah Hartenstein wouldn't let that happen to him because Isaiah can probably run about twice as fast as Tyson Chandler can. Now, that might be a bit of a hyperbole, but I'm just frustrated that Isaiah is not getting even a fair shake at roster minutes after he has proven that he can give production to this team. In fact, there was a point where Tyson Chandler fumbled a pass in the paint from Eric Gordon. Eric Gordon drove into the paint, had a clean pass to Tyson Chandler, who just wasn't ready for it. Just fumbled the pass. Lakers got the ball, and I think they scored on the very next fast break possession. I'm trying to remember all this off the top of my head. But even in that moment, Isaiah Hartenstein's shown that he can catch fireballs in the paint from Russell Westbrook, so Isaiah could have handled that quick little, you know, shovel pass from Eric Gordon, I'd believe. I'm not going to keep going down this rabbit hole. I've voiced my opinion on it. Isaiah Hartenstein should be getting minutes. Back to the point at hand, the Rockets have an open roster spot. They also have guys who don't deserve minutes at this point in Tyson Chandler and Tabo Sefolosha. They just don't. So why not waive one of those two guys? Why not jettison them off to another team, you know, for cash considerations, and then use your TPEs to acquire talent from some other team? You've still got remaining trade assets. You can still trade the 2020 and the 2022 draft pick. So they still have avenues to improve the team, but I feel like right now Daryl Morey has constraints placed on him to try and improve the team, yes, but I don't see this team paying the luxury tax. And to put that in perspective, the last 10 NBA champions, probably even longer than that, but 10 was the last number I remember reading. The last 10 NBA champions have all been luxury tax teams. So Tillman cannot have his cake and eat it too. There's no, I hope I use that expression properly. If I didn't, oh well, it's going to live. It's going to stay there. He can't save and not spend on the luxury tax and still compete for a championship. It's impossible. It cannot be done. And so I hope that I will in a few, you know, in a month, in a short month from now, because the NBA trade deadline is coming up. It's right around the corner in February. I hope that in less than a month from now, I am eating crow and that the Rockets have made not just one, not two, multiple moves to improve this roster, to give this team a legitimate chance come playoff time. Because Daryl Morey said it before, he doesn't care what team he has on the court in October or November or December or even January. He cares about the team that's on the court in April and May and June, ideally June. And I'm the same way. If somehow he can pull a rabbit out of a hat and create a roster that is going to be competitive come playoff time, I'm all for it. But I'm also not holding my breath. Whew, got a little bit heated there in that segment. I'll tone it back a little bit in our final segment here in just one moment, so you guys do not go anywhere. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. That was two segments of me ranting and raving about the Rockets' loss against the LA Lakers, dropping the team to 26-15. So now, as far as the standings are concerned, the Rockets are comfortably in sole possession of the sixth seed in the Western Conference, a half game back of the Dallas Mavericks. They are 2.5 games back of the Jazz and Nuggets, who are the 3 and 4 seeds respectively, and they are a whole 3 games back of the LA Clippers, who now comfortably hold the 2 seed. The good news is they're only 2 games back of the loss column of the 2 seed. And the way things have gone this season, with the Rockets being in the 2 seed themselves just a couple short weeks ago, there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking in the Western Conference standings. So do the playoffs start today? They do not. Are the Rockets the 6th seed in the playoffs right now? Like if they started today? Absolutely they are. But do they have time to still secure some more wins and put themselves in better playoff positioning before we actually get there? Absolutely they do. There's problems with this team. That is obvious. To anybody that's been watching the games, the inconsistency is an issue. Again, you get the Rockets playing arguably a really solid first half against this Lakers squad, and then they come out and they get punched in the jaw in the third quarter. But then they come back in and they fought dead even in the fourth quarter. It was 33-33 in the fourth quarter. So they really lost the game in the third. And so you have these inconsistencies in the game where you have lapses for this team for a quarter or for a half. And yes, that's an issue. But it's also easy to point to James Harden's inefficiency, his struggles, the role players, you know, maybe not stepping up quite as much as you would have hoped. Again, 13 points for Eric Gordon off the bench, just 5 of 14 shooting overall, not the best. And again, these are offensive problems, yes. And then defense is a whole nother demon. That's a whole nother issue. But again, at least the effort level was there. And this team has so much talent that they're going to win some games just based off of being more talented than opposing teams. So really, at this point, am I counting them out? Are they not going to win a playoff series? No, that's not what I'm saying. Are they favorites? Are they contenders? I don't think they're contenders either. I think they're somewhere middle of the pack, and I think right now they're a team that, as currently constructed, could get lucky and knock down some top-tier opponents. Because if you've got Russ and if you've got Harden, and if your role players catch fire, this team's hard to beat. We've seen them look absolutely dominant at points in this season. Now, can you do it multiple times in the first, second, and third round, or you know, Western Conference Finals and then do it again in the finals? Maybe, maybe not. So again, I'm hopeful that Daryl Morey has some reinforcements coming in, that he can find some people to bolster this roster, because giving up 20-plus points to four different Lakers is not ideal. LeBron had 31, Kuzma had 23, Danny Green had 20, and KCP had 20. The Lakers didn't, it's not like they played a phenomenal game. They only shot 48% from the floor, 33% from behind the arc. They shot 72% at the free throw line. By all metrics, the Rockets had a better offensive game than the Lakers did. They really did. But they just didn't come out on top. The math is, where's the math actually on this? Hang on. Yeah, there we go. Sorry, the Lakers just hit five more shots. There we go, because they were dead even on free throws. Both teams hit 23. The Rockets hit one more three-pointer than the Lakers did. I was trying to find the discrepancy in the final score, but there it is. Lakers hit five more shots in the paint, or just inside the three-point line, than the Rockets did. So, again, and yeah, they didn't have Anthony Davis, so how much can you really chalk this game up to? Probably not a lot. But again, it's hard to count this team out just because of their raw talent. Now, I wish that we could rely more on their defense. I wish that we could rely on their coaching. I wish that we could rely on somebody not named Russell Westbrook or James Harden. But we can't, unfortunately. That's where we're at with this team. They're still going to win some games. But with every game that they lose, they are more so cementing themselves as what will likely be a lower seed in the playoffs. Because every loss counts at this point. Granted, you're still two losses back of the two seed, but I have a feeling that some of these other Western Conference playoff teams are going to start finding their groove, and they're not going to be dropping the close games or the games that they're not supposed to lose like this Rockets club has been doing. So I think I'll wrap things up there from the Lakers angle. Now the Oklahoma City Thunder are coming back into town. God, this would be a great game to win. I mean, obviously, the team's on a three-game losing streak. Two and four in the last six games. This would be a game that you absolutely, and I hate using the term must-win game, but the team is on a slide. Now, it doesn't seem like the team's overall chemistry has been affected. It seems like they're still very much in this together. Russell Westbrook has said all the right things. James has said all the right things. But they've got to do it on the court. They've got to go out and actually perform. And that means taking pride in your defense, going out there, not getting blown out by the Thunder. If somehow the Thunder come in here and blow the Rockets out on their home court, I may lose faith in the team, at least momentarily. I'll recover, but I may lose faith in the team, at least momentarily, if that were to happen. And I think a key to that is, again, defensive miscues are going to happen. That's the Rockets switch so much on defense, you're going to get lost a couple possessions throughout the game. That's bound to happen. Even the 17-18 team that was so elite on that side of the basketball had defensive miscues. You're not going to be perfect defensively, but you have to come out with energy and effort. You just cannot be lackadaisical on that side. And if you are, if you don't put in the effort, then teams are going to get easy buckets, players are going to get rolling, they're going to find their shot against you. That's why so many players have like career games against the Rockets, because it's easy. Because it's easy to beat their perimeter defenders off the dribble. It's easy to get open looks. It's easy to get points in the paint, because this team does not defend well at all. At least they haven't consistently. So for them to win this game against the Thunder, they've just got to play well. And James Harden has to find his way back to being James Harden. He does. I wish that he didn't have to be Batman to win the Rockets games. I wish that he could have a mediocre night every now and again, or even rest, you know, take a game off every now and again, and this team still had a chance to win. But as currently constructed, it's just not enough, because you basically need two of three things to happen. You need either Westbrook to have a great game, Harden to have a great game, or the role players collectively to have a great game. And so far, Westbrook's been the only consistent thing in 2020. And I'm not really relying on these role players to suddenly catch fire and start dropping in 15 to 20 point games apiece and, you know, shooting over 40% from behind the 3-point arc. I don't think that's going to happen suddenly. I'd put my money on Harden finding his shot before all the role players suddenly find theirs. Austin Rivers is supposed to hopefully be back for the Thunder game, so hopefully he's in the lineup again, and, you know, maybe we'll see some Isaiah Hartenstein, maybe we won't. Mike D'Antoni continuing to not play him will always baffle me, but it'll be an interesting game. And if they win, it doesn't erase everything bad that has happened. This team has an uphill battle to climb because the schedule only gets tougher. They are in the midst of a really difficult 8-game stretch against some really top-tier opponents. I think that's where I'm going to wrap things up as far as the basketball is concerned. So to wrap up the actual podcast, I do want to take a moment to recognize it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And from a personal standpoint, I had the privilege to visit the Lorraine Motel in March of 2019 while I was in Memphis covering the University of Houston men's basketball team for the AAC tournament. I would highly recommend anybody who has the means to, if you're looking to travel, if you're looking to visit somewhere, whether you're road tripping or you're there to visit family or whatever it may be, I highly recommend visiting the Lorraine Motel. I spent an entire day there. The amount of history and knowledge that is dripping within that place, you know, the way that they take care of the environment there, it was a very humbling experience to be in that atmosphere, to see the thousands, hundreds, tens, hundreds of thousands of lives that MLK had touched, and to think about where we would be as a society without his impact is really astonishing. He was the voice of the civil rights movement, and we wouldn't have the NBA that we have today if it weren't for him. I was reading an article from The Undefeated earlier today, just kind of, you know, trying to enlighten myself on some of the impacts that MLK had on basketball. And obviously Bill Russell was very vocal in the civil rights movement, and MLK's death actually happened the day that Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain were set to go up against each other in the Eastern Conference Finals back in 1968. Yeah. So just thinking about the effects that he had, not obviously not just basketball, but just across the entire civil rights movement, across all of America, it's important that we recognize him and what he was able to accomplish. And look, this isn't, I had to say this a whole bunch during the whole Chinagate episode, right? You know, I did multiple podcasts right when I took over the podcast, saying this isn't Locked on China. And, you know, this isn't Locked on Civil Rights, but MLK was an important figure in American history, in world history. And so I just wanted to take a moment to highlight him on this day, his day. And, you know, hopefully maybe you guys learned a little something, or maybe you guys can, you know, if you don't know much about MLK, you know, you take out your phone, Google, learn a little bit more. I like reading about history. I like learning things. I like to broaden my own horizons when I can. So hopefully that's something you guys are interested in doing. I wish that, you know, I didn't exactly plan a history lesson for this. That wasn't exactly where I wanted to take this or the direction I wanted to go in with this. But I just wanted to get his name out there, obviously, on this day of days, take a moment to remember him. So that will be where we wrap things up for as far as the podcast is concerned. As always, thank you guys for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. The show is, of course, on there at Locked on Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website lockedonrockets.com, and our email address lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries, really just a way for you guys to reach out and tell me if there's anything that we can do to improve this show for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they're published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So again, for this January 20th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.